I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
You want to hand me the accounts payable?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Chair, I move that we approve the Rout County check approval sheet for the week, April 30th through May 4th, in the amount of accounts payable check cycle date $300,388.75. Payroll checks in the amount of $469,276.59. And the IRS and state income tax wires in the amount of $192,473.65 for total disbursements of $962,138.99.
Second, any discussion? Items of note, Tom? I'm sure you have some items of note.
A few items here. Payment to Correctional Healthcare Management. This is for the sheriff's inmate medical care insurance, and this is for May of the period starting May of 2018, at $10,961.58. A payment to OAG Aviation Worldwide. This is a payment from YVR Yampa Valley Regional Airport. This is for the flight view service through October 3rd of 2018, so $6,456 for that service. Payment to the town of Hayden. This is also from Yampa Valley Regional Airport. This is for law enforcement presence at the airport during the month of March 2018. Payment of $15,180. Payment to Northwest Colorado Consultants, Inc. And this is for road and bridge. This is for the district to shop rest remodel. And there was a business. Gosh, the contractor's name. He's a business.
That's Tyke Pierce.
Thank you. It is
Tyke.
Tyke Pierce, yeah.
Yep. Land something.
Yep. So anyway, this cost $22,635.96. And finally, a payment to Department of Interior USGS. This is from the Environmental Health Budget. And this is a second quarter payment for the water quality monitoring project.
Good. Any other questions or discussion? So I guess I'd have questions. So how are we doing on our ERP? And you're still sending out those AP?
Yeah.
And are we still, when are we going to be up forever looking through to page 62 to start the new week's approval system?
I ask that question of Noel Neal down in the county department every week that I get one of those because, you know, the larger.
Well, I'm sure you have to look through it all the way.
Yes,
it's just time draining as hell.
Oh, yeah, and because they are so many pages now, it's over 200 pages now.
Yeah.
I can't even click on it on our system with the spinning wheel of death going on.
Even in-house here.
Yes, even in-house. So I can imagine what is happening for you guys trying to. Tyler is still working on that, trying to get that.
I mean, you need, at some point in time, you need to put closure to things.
I agree.
And start a new thing.
Yes.
You know, so.
It might not work, so we'll figure it out. Even though we're trying to go paper.
Well, you can't think this is rocket science, you know?
You know, Noel is saying that the munis is going to fix the problem.
So okay, well, good. I just wanted to ask the question. So we have a motion on the table. Any other discussion or questions? All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. So we have our items of note from yesterday. We didn't meet yesterday since we didn't have a quorum. And so anyhow, we're on to our 10:35 consent agenda items.
Is it item D that you're here to discuss?
F.
F. Okay. So, Mr. Chair, I move that we approve consent agenda items A through E.
Second. Any other discussion on any of those? All those in favor of the motion, say aye.
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 Do you want to come up and talk to us about F?
Yep. And we appreciate you. having the discussion. I don't think we're going to have any questions with it.
This is the one you sent us the email on, like $8,800 worth or?
We're going to purchase 22,000 in TANF from Garfield County. Uh-huh. And I calculated out the maintenance of effort, which is a percentage similar to CCAP, where our county has to pay that. And I calculated right. 12.76 based on Mary Sue's numbers. Garfield said their direction is that just let the state calculate it. And then they'll figure it out. So I didn't want to put the wrong number. So it's going to be between 12.76 and the estimate is 15%. So it's not that number I put, maybe off a little bit, but I just want to make sure you understand it's less than 15% the state wants to calculate it.
Okay.
And I guess for discussion here, since we've already pulled it and the rest, I mean, we're still very supportive of bringing TANF dollars in to serve our needs of our citizens and the rest. So, seemed like a bad
okay.
idea.
Mr. Chair, I move that we approve consent agenda item F.
So then I guess the question, though, because did not the agenda F have the amount, so we'll leave the amount blank, then the maintenance of effort will be determined by, I'm trying to find it here.
Yeah,
here it is.
It's page 43 of 121. Yep, that's correct. So we'll just say that it's an amount that the state's going to calculate it.
I'm fine with that. You get that? Dean? Very good. So I'll second the motion. If I didn't, I think I did already. But anyhow, so any other discussion? Very good. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
No, come sit down.
Yep, sit down.
Thank you.
Again,
this is,
Luke
Schneider, Environmental Compliance Officer for
the
disposal
yeah.
site.
Covered your dress.
Yeah.
And then I guess I'll start off, just make sure, you know.
Follow the rules.
Yep, the rules. There you go. You've done this too, Wes. Les.
Oh, did you want to?
No, nope, go ahead.
Oh, you didn't have to do. I thought you were going to read me the rules.
No, no, you know, we're just trying to stay out of what Tom was talking about.
Yeah, we don't want to get into quasi-judicial stuff. Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
All right.
So. Okay. So, I'm here today because representing Twin Environmental Services, Twin Enviro Services, because we received this letter dated April 13th from Alan, signed by Alan Goldich, informing Twin that the enforcement hearing for the solidification basin that was tabled indefinitely by the Board of County Commissioners was now scheduled for planning on May 17th and the BOCC for June 12th. This letter said that the hope was that the revised engineered design and operations plan, or EDOP, for the disposal site submitted to CDPHE would generate guidelines for the county issued portions of its permit, the special use permit from the county. The revised EDOP was submitted to CDPHE on time. There was an April deadline. We made it. We spent about $200,000 in outside engineering costs to get this thing updated and a huge amount of staff time. Then in April, CDPHE generated a letter. On May 1st, we got a letter from CDPHE detailing increased record keeping and reporting requirements and improvements that must be made, and they've all been made. In addition, that same letter said that there was a detailed construction and compliance schedule. That was communicated to CDPHE, and the same letter was not. That was the same letter on May 1st, and Twin agreed to this schedule. In addition, upgrades to the liner system were required by CDPHE to be made by October 31st, 2018. We requested a 3-year extension for valid reasons. CDPHE said no extension. We agreed to complete the upgrade by October 31st of 2018. Okay, very small, and the letter that Goldich sent to us said that the fact that we asked for an extension was part of the reason for having the enforcement hearings. Very small amounts of exploration and production waste have come to the disposal site in the last few years. This is because drillers are now using a flocculant on site, on the drill sites, to solidify liquid wastes. They're using them at their drill sites, and then they transport the solids to disposal sites rather than liquids. We do see occasionally, we see some EMP liquids, but we're not seeing them. We do see significant amounts of locally generated sand and grease trap wastes, locally generated here in Route County, sand and grease traps. They have no place to go, and if we are forced to close the basin, it'd be back to dumping them in the out in the yards and out in the farm fields. A detailed complaint, so we got that, let's see. Now, the regulations for liner design change originally changed in 2008. The design of the liner system for solidification basins was changed in 2008. The basin was built in 2003. In 2015...
That was a CDPHE rule change?
Yeah, they adopted a new rule for solidification basins. Yep. Yes. Ours was grandfathered. It was built in 2003. In 2015, there was a review of our basin by CDPHE because of the old liner system, and they again approved it as it was for continued use. CDPHE and Route County Environment Health has claimed that some changes in the levels of some constituents in our monitoring wells indicated that the liner was leaking. We emphatically disagree. First, it was barium. That's a common constituent in drilling mud. It was found in a well sample, but outside engineering investigations showed that barium is naturally occurring in the soil of the Milner landfill. Then it was fluctuating levels of chloride, but that was found to be fluctuating in upgradient wells. You understand what an upgradient well is. Okay. Next, it was elevated levels of sulfate. But the engineers determined that historically sulfate was elevated in upgradient wells from 2009 to 2012, and then it went back down. In the last few days, CDPHE has raised issues with beryllium and magnesium. We've not yet researched that issue or those issues. Why are all these problems with detections and fears of environmental degradation from the landfill and the solidification, why are they surfacing? I'm not going to get into a detailed discussion of technical issues now, nor does TWN want to do this in front of two lay bodies in the next few weeks, the Planning Commission this month and the BOCC in June. You got to remember, this site was an underground coal mine starting in 1903 and was closed in 1947. It was an above-ground coal mine from the 1940s to the 1970s. The use of this site was a county-operated landfill from 1971 to 1990. It was unlined and unmonitored. The liquid solidification basin was built next to a monitoring well that TWN installed in 1983. The reason we installed that well there was because it was a county septic waste dump site. Unlined, unmonitored, and open 24/7 from 1971 to 1983. We built the basin there because the well was already there, and we thought that it would be useful to continue to track the pollution from the septage. Coal mines generate lots of issues with groundwater, and we believe that that is always going to be an issue with detection over in the at the Milner disposal site. TWN is doing everything CDPHE requires, and Route County Environmental Health has had input into all of those requirements, and they participated in all the meetings that we know of with CDPHE. That's in respect to the dual process. When the EDOP is reviewed and adopted, additional changes are incorporated for the operation, and the additional changes will be adopted for the operation of solidification basins, and all these requirements can be included in the special use permit by reference. Having these enforcement hearings now will require TWN to bring in engineers to provide testimony, will be at great expense. When the special use permit process comes before you, we will have to have these hearings all over again. Over 20 small counties have lost their disposal sites due to costly compliance requirements in Colorado. We have less than 60,000 tons annually. Front range sites are typically over 1 million tons. We think you want to be sensitive to that reality and understand that we're doing all the things required to be protective of the environment. We want to act responsibly. That's it.
Very good. Thanks, Les.
Okay.
Not appropriate to comment back.
I know.
So thank you for coming in.
Sure.
There was one other thing. If you want to leave that stuff with Tegan, you can leave that stuff with Tegan, too, for make sure we get, I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyhow, we got to record it.
Yeah. We have one, I certainly can send it to you. I have one small initial comment to make, and that was that I forgot to include, that when it said in this letter that the BOCC directed the staff to hold these enforcement hearings, and Twin received no notice of that, the fact that it was going to be discussed or that it was on an agenda or it was I don't know how it came up, but we've got no information to come in and present this information at the time. And I have talked to a number of staff members and frankly have gotten nowhere with trying to get this thing canceled, and that's why we're here. We feel very strongly about this. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks. Have a good afternoon. Hey, Scott.
Come on up, Scott.
Nothing nearly as technical as that.
That's good.
That's good.
The
yeah.
Whales in the gerbil cage can only, squirrels in the gerbil cage can only handle so much.
Okay. So I believe I sent you guys probably an email some weeks ago because there's an article about the county considering buying the old Steamboat Pilot building. And what I would suggest, and I think sort of the same thing is sort of going on nationally, is that we seem to have areas that are doing well where the money and growth is being focused into those areas. That I was, again, instead of trying to do an email exchange and to just come down here and talk about, is that I think the county should have a very strong responsibility that future jobs are spread out to Hayden, Oak Creek, and Yampa, and not put within Steamboat. That in Steamboat, your costs are much higher. And, I mean, I've already, a few times a year, I end up finding hitchhikers coming back to Steamboat that are, they have to get a drug test or something. They have to come to Steamboat for it. Everybody has to come to Steamboat for everything nowadays. And
so let me tell you how this started. So the couple years ago, Bill Rangage did a space needs study for our Department of Human Services, which is across the street in the old morgue. And we were anticipating that we might build a new building in this parking lot and keep that as parking, or build a new building there. Who knows where we would displace them. And so when the idea of buying the pilot building for around $4 million came up, we thought we would investigate it. It's on 5.5 acres now, but that 1.5 acres that's out on the highway, the current owner is working to subdivide that. So it's listed for sale, I think, at 5.2 when the city was looking at it. But when the 1.5 acres is subdivided off, they would sell the building for around $4 million is the price we've heard. It has about 12,000 square feet of office space. The pilot wants to sell the desks and chairs and everything that are in there because they're not bringing them down with them. And then the printing press is another 12,000 square feet. And one of the things we looked at is moving the motor pool and the motor pool mechanics out of the District 3 shop and down into the printing press. The reason is the District 3 shop is starting to get kind of crowded and it has some demands on it, like the city and county have talked about moving search and rescue off of that building in Yampa and putting them up at the District 3 shop. We've talked about putting in a wash bay up there for the city and county to share. Anyway, when Rangage was throwing out big round numbers on what it would cost to build this building, we know from what we're seeing with CLEP, it's going to be way more than $4 million to build a building down at this downtown campus. And this is something out in the future
because we have to
get through the CLEP.
Okay, so
one of the things that I had talked about is, okay, well, let's sell this downtown campus, put it back into the private property tax pool, and move human services west of town. As far as Hayden and Oak Creek, we're sending our human services department to those communities several times a week.
But I would suggest for philosophy is to say,
if you're
a county department and that you're growing, that if you can't have any efficiencies of technology and whatever else, I mean,
right?
You know, I've got friends still in Silicon Valley and their management levels and their organizations are shrinking unless they are growing at 50%. They're shrinking. But I guess I would sort of tell HR, if you guys need a bigger building, it's going to be in Hayden. It's not going to be in Steamboat. It's going to be somewhere else. And if you're a department that's growing, expect that your growth is going to occur outside of Steamboat. And not just west of Steamboat, in actual Hayden, in actual Yampa. And saying, you know what, we can actually move. If we need this, that, or the other, we are going to actually grow. Because, in Steamboat, the cost of the building and the land is $300 a square foot, $200 a square foot. You should be able to build new special thing for less than that outside of Steamboat. And then the jobs are where the jobs are needed.
So we're totally supportive of that, Scott, and I've been championing that for the last 7 years. It's like we got to get out of expensive Steamboat for some of these, especially for rural constituents that utilize the services. They don't need to come to Steamboat.
And if you had HR,
human services.
It's human services, not human resources.
Yeah, so
Human services, okay. Which is essentially okay. A state-funded department.
Okay, say GIS or whatever. But if GIS or some other county department were to actually locate in Oak Creek, it would be figured out how to have a front office there with a service desk that could handle everything that people right now come to Steamboat for. It's like, okay. We've worked out with the county clerk and the county treasurer and so on how we accept all these services and forward it to the Steamboat department if it's not all done electronically.
I'm with you, and I know that Steamboat's really expensive. But from a transportation perspective, it is the central location for citizens coming to,
and
no
the same point
live.
In time.
Otherwise, we have everyone driving to Oak Creek.
No, because you just
speak. Or?
No, but the point is, if it's the GIS department,
yes.
You'll find that the GIS departments tend to live there more than Steamboat.
Right.
And people don't have to drive to service GIS, you have the electronics.
Right.
And that's part of the thing is, and then say the rest
it's
of
it's a
the,
completely different thing though too. I mean, we're not going to get down into the weeds, but GIS is one person. Human services.
I didn't know what to, but I'm just saying whatever department, if a department says that they need to grow, that I guess my philosophical management plan says that if a department is going to grow, you are going to do your growth outside of Steamboat. That if anybody needs a new office building, expect it to not be in Steamboat. I guess would be my sort of philosophical thing. If we need to have a big mechanic shop, let's put the mechanic shop closer to where half the mechanics live anyway, which is Oak Creek and Hayden.
Well, we do. We have a mechanic shop in all three of the district shops. Motor pool are like the vehicles that we use for county employees to drive, and the vast majority of county employees are here in Steamboat, so they pick them up at the District 3 shop. So that's why the motor pool is located there. We're not going to move motor pool to West Route or South Route.
But there's also the question of when you start doing heavier maintenance, is the heavier maintenance done in a bigger shop there, or is the heavier
we
maintenance...
We do it in all three.
Yeah, so yeah. All three of the shops.
Yeah. But we can talk about more about it if we get to it. I mean, we're just trying to get through the cleft right now. And it may be something that gets addressed, and it may not.
Yeah,
your point's not listened to. When we listen to it all the time, and yet we still have. There's a lot of people that move to Rock County and work for Rock County because they want to live in Steamboat Springs too. And so then you start forcing people to commute because they want to live in Steamboat Springs and then commute to a place that's a remote location so they can service their customers as well. Mm. So we got both sides going all around.
But also in the other part, probably the private sector, is that a lot more is being done remotely from HQ. And that,
agreed.
And we need the technology
infrastructure to support
that. And the government... is sort of the one part of management where that hasn't really taken hold, I would argue. That is, government says, there's both city and county says, oh, we need to locate these people here. And it's like, well, why are these people, first off, there's a question, well, why exactly are they necessarily government employees as compared to being subcontracted? And the other thing is, why are you locating them here? I mean, my sister in San Francisco is managing people, managing people in four different sites around the world. And it's like, that doesn't seem to be any great issue, but for government, it's like, well, we need to have a cubicle in a room here. And it's like, why? And there's fiber down to Oak Creek, and there's fiber out to Hayden. I mean, there's the same connectivity within.
It's dark. It's not lit.
The fiber, yeah, in Hayden.
Yeah, It's in the ground. You're right. CenturyLink's got it. It's just not fired up. You can place a commercial order for it, and they won't fill it. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Thanks for your comments.
That's the thing. Yep. It is. It's
Scott.
Okay. Good luck.
Thank
you. See you, Scott.
Okay. Have a good afternoon.
Enjoy.
Dan, come on up.
I think Gio's coming up too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he said he would.
So we get to spend some money here.
Yes.
Steve's a drag master.
So, you want to start?
Yeah. So we're going to ask.
So hang on a second. Turn on your mic there.
So we're going to start off with the Dragmaster then. Yep.
Yep. So we're asking to consider to waive the formal purchasing process and approve an approval for the purchase and authorization of the county manager to electronically approve a purchase order to ABI Attachments in the amount of $25,227 for one Dragmaster Arena Drag for the Building and Plant Department to be used at the county fairgrounds.
So, Steve, tell us,
So
evidently, this is supposed to be the cat's meow. This thing can purr. And
it's a pretty nice machine. It's going to be far superior than what they've done before. And I guess we're kind of justified in purchasing it because of the past efforts we've made to save money in dust control.
Uh-huh. Yep.
And that's been very successful.
So does that have a water tank on it then?
It does. It comes with a 500 gallon water tank.
And then do we put any additive in with the water then?
Or? We will be adding some dust. We have an additive that we can put into that.
And so in essence, you'll be doing what they've been doing, the outside contractor's been doing for dust control.
Exactly.
We'll be able to do that ourselves in-house.
Exactly.
Sounds like... And so what is the dust additive then?
And we have a bunch of clay, right? We're not pure sand.
It's mostly clay.
Okay.
So there are some sand. I'm not sure exactly what is in. It's not bagged chloride, I know that. But they were paying somebody $6,000 to come do it.
Yeah, and it was supposed to last like 3 years.
And lasts a gallon of that for a few hundred dollars. And you can just add it to our water tanks and our water trucks and just do it ourselves. So we've managed to save quite a bit of money doing that.
All right.
Is this going into the equipment pool?
It should be going into the equipment pool.
For replacement, you're saying?
Yeah.
Yes. Capital replacement, yes.
Yep.
Mr. Chair, I move that we waive the formal purchasing process and approve the purchase and authorize the county manager's electronic signature on a purchase order to ABI Attachments in the amount of $25,227 for one drag master arena drag for the Building and Plant Department to be used at Grout County Fairgrounds.
Second. Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Very good. So, Manny Excavator.
Going right to that. Okay, consideration to approve the purchase and authorize the county manager to approve a purchase order for one new Bobcat E45T4 mini excavator to be utilized by the Road and Bridge Department.
So, finally, we're getting a mini excavator. We had an old backhoe that was due for replacement, and rather than replacing a backhoe, which we already have three of them. We thought about going in a more versatile way. Mini excavators are definitely the way to go right now. It's easier to handle. It can be pulled by a pickup, and you know, a crew in one pickup can do a job. Very versatile. Have good warranty. Service is in Craig. So that's if you use a mini ex, you know how handy they are.
Grew up across the street from the three Severson kids.
Severson?
Yeah.
So you know Cactus.
I don't know Cactus.
Oh, that's his name.
Cactus. Daniel? It's the youngest one, and then the sisters are Terry and Julie. Does he have a kid named Cactus?
I think he'll have a kid named Cactus.
Okay.
Cactus.
All right. Must be a grandkid. Oh, the old man died in a car accident when the kids were in high school.
Yeah.
So explain the budget thing here. What? So we had some money left
so
over.
So we had.
So we're not re. So we're. What's happening to the old backhoe?
So we're selling that.
So that's going on the disposal.
Rather than
list.
Replacing a backhoe, we're right. buying this. Now, this was $55,000.
But we're going to have three backhoes still? We have four
now? We still
now,
have, yeah,
and we're
we have
selling
four
one.
Now.
Okay.
We're going to sell one, and hopefully get some money back.
So we had four before. We had three mm-hmm. in one shop plus one Rover.
So we had
Rover.
One per shop and one in Yamba. That okay. is usually, it originally belongs to the to the crusher. Now, the crusher doesn't really need a backhoe. It's too small. So,
yeah, they need front-end loaders.
Yeah, they need the front-end loader and the track hoe.
Yeah.
So where are you going to keep the mini excavator?
It's going to be shared.
Okay.
Yeah. So we had budgeted $120,000 for a backhoe replacement, but rather than replacing a backhoe, we're using $50,000 for or $60,000 for a mini, and then we're going to use the rest for a bucket truck. As we had
a bucket truck, for, can you
yeah.
explain that? What is
a
what
bucket
is?
Truck? So for right away tree clearing, right now.
Oh, okay. No, I know what you yeah. mean. Electrical
bucket truck. Yeah, use bucket truck. Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah, right now the guy's been chopping in the back of the backhoe in the bucket
yeah.
to cut trees and whatnot. It's not safe.
That's
so. Not safe at all, and I'm sure OSHA
no,
will be
I just, I need
happy.
I need a little
when are we going to see yeah. the item to buy bucket truck?
Just working through it, you know,
we
only
that.
Have money to buy a used one, so we're going to have to search around.
Okay.
We had a meeting with YVEA, and they have a couple that they're going to auction off, but that we have to wait for the auction.
Okay.
So.
All right. Mr. Yeah. Chair, I move that we award and authorize the county manager to approve a purchase order for one new Bobcat E45 T4 mini excavator to be utilized by the Road and Bridge Department to Severson Bobcat, Craig, Colorado, for $54,073.
Second. Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, so we got, we still...
That's it. They're done with these guys.
Other, so...
Oh, Steve, we want to do
we still have Steve's thing here, too.
Yeah.
So let's go ahead and do that, and then we'll go back. Oh.
Have a good afternoon, you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yep. Have a good afternoon.
Okay, this is a capital addition request requiring supplemental budget approval to provide a cell phone booster for connectivity during emergency operations at the primary EOC located at the new Justice Center training facility. So this need was recognized during the Stagecoach Dam exercise that took place back in late 2017. When they had that exercise, there was multiple agencies there that could connect on their cell phones through the basement of the Justice Center. So the need was recognized at that time, and it was added to the improvement plan for corrective action for the EOC needs at that time.
Is there only one vendor for this technology?
We solicited three quotes. We got two.
Okay.
I worked with Jason Nettles on both of them. We both determined that the cheaper quote was going to meet the needs of what we were trying to do down there.
Okay.
So we'll have a omnidirectional antenna up on the roof that provides signal from all cell phone carriers.
Like just a big whip?
So it's an antenna.
How tall is it?
I think it's probably maybe 12 feet.
Okay.
And it'll be attached to some structure up there, and then we'll be routed through wires down into the telephone room to a booster. Amplifier booster.
So this $10,500 includes all of that?
Includes all of that. Installation.
That routed through the wires and then the booster as well?
The booster, and then it feeds out to, I think we have eight antennas in the basement which provide signal for all the areas in the basement for that, so they'll have self.
You know, and again, I'm stupid on the technology and the rest, but we have fiber out there now. I just can't imagine that you have to spend this kind of money.
This is cell phones.
I understand, but your cell phone still hooks up to wireless.
Yeah, but they're all going back to their own switch through the wired system.
Is that what the problem is?
Yeah, so I'm guessing that this is talking to, you know, everything from the 800 megahertz up to 1.9 gigahertz and just amplifying it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right, cell and data connectivity.
Okay.
So that doesn't go through the fiber optics. So
again, I don't mean to be stupid here.
Well,
but,
if you lived out in the country and you have a bad cell phone signal, you can buy boosters that enhance the signal.
They take the signal
coming in, and then they enhance it, amplify it, and then send it back out so your phone can pick up on it. But this is not a home improvement type booster. It's a commercial.
No, I understand that. I'm just still struggling with the fact that we have fiber out there, why we can't hook up all this stuff back into the fiber, and that's my stupidity here. But.
Well, and I don't know of any technology that can do that kind of conversion from cell signals.
To be able to talk to six different vendors, because in theory this is going to work whether you're carrying Verizon, AT&T, Nextel, Sprint,
right.
T-Mobile.
Then it was important to have all those vendors too, because
people carry what they're carrying. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you went out and got three different bids on this?
We got three quotes.
We asked for three.
We got two back. Our low bid was $10,150, and the closest bid next to that was around $14,000.
You ready?
Yep.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I move that we approve the supplemental budget request for the purchase of an EOC cell phone signal booster at the Justice Center Training Facility and approve to proceed with the purchase order not to exceed $10,500 with CNC Technical Services, Inc.
Second. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 All right.
So you actually have the budget that we're signing or what?
I do.
Two of us need to sign it. So.
Oh, okay.
One that you've been rolling around getting signatures on.
Yes. Do you want to sign two times?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'm a lot of brain.
It's almost my birthday. Have a good afternoon.
All right. Well, thank you. And thanks for everything.
Yeah, that's an essential need down there.
Yes, it is.
I mean, it just seems odd. Of course, I don't know enough to even get in trouble on it, so.
Well, they have cell phone service on the main level and the upper level, but not in the basement, so. Yeah.
With all the concrete, you can understand that. So.
Yep. Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Kathy, come on up.
Sorry, I'm late.
That's fine.
Respect your time, and
we
apologize for wasting
it. We're right on schedule.
We're doing fine.
Okay, so I am here to talk to you about the Route County sick leave policy and for you to consider and approve edits to the policy. The existing sick leave policy allows employees to use sick time to care for an ill member of their immediate family, and immediate family is defined as mother, stepmother, father, stepfather, spouse, domestic partner, son, stepson, daughter. stepdaughter, brother, sister, mother-in-law, father-in-law, son-in-law, daughter-in-law, grandparent, grandchild, foster parent, foster child, or guardian. But it did not include brother-in-law and sister-in-law, and it was requested at the personnel committee to consider updating the policy to include those family members as part of this policy.
So how did that discussion come up with the personnel committee?
Well, somebody just brought it forward and said, you know, we're close to brother-in-laws and sister-in-law, and it has daughter-in-law, it has all those other, has almost everything else there, and it just, people thought it would be nice if that was included. So if
sometimes you like your brother-in-law better than your brother.
Well, it might be.
It's to address immediate death or the, you know, the funeral of a family member.
Okay. I don't have any problems with
it. I don't have any problems. So I would move that we approve the edits to the Rock County sick leave policy that's been presented to us.
Second.
Thank you.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you.
So I haven't been going to Manic, but I guess we started to
Started off with our 1 o'clock item here. So we have consideration to approve a grant request, $10,000 for the capacity building grant fund for the Crossings M&A Market Rehabilitation Elevator Project. So, Jim, I'll start off with you.
Jim Peterson from the Museum and Heritage Fund Advisory Board. We heard this application 2 weeks ago, Tuesday, for the $10,000 grant on a $26,000 construction of an elevator in the Crossings Market. The MOFOB ultimately approved it, or recommended it for approval to the county commissioners, but we had a lot more discussion than what we thought we would have on. There were two issues that came up. One, Janet told us that unbeknownst to them, being the Crossings Market people, and Emily was kind of in the same boat until the day before, our policy, county's policy, is that no work is to be done until the grant is approved. The contractor had paid deposits for this elevator to have them start working on it, start building the elevator, start, you know, making the rails and all the fun things that go with it, but no work had been done in the building. And it was, as best as MOFOB could determine, was a oversight between, you know, the Yampa Historical Society, Rock County Historical, and the contractor. The contractor was doing what contractors do, getting the project going, and knew that the elevator company needed 4 months, and they wanted a deposit, as usual. So we basically addressed that issue and said, well, in good faith, the in good faith, they had not started work. They had complied with the rules. The second issue was a question about the elevator. What was the historic relevance of putting an elevator into Crossings Market that had never ever had an elevator before? All of us feel very strongly that the market should, the improvements and the work going on should continue and be finished. But we were concerned as to whether this would really be an appropriate expense for the Museum and Heritage Fund Board. The board members in attendance were a little bit divided. even though we all voted unanimously to approve it. We were a little divided on whether it was an appropriate, you know, expense. The overriding factor was that it then, by having ADA elevator compliance, it allowed the second floor, the community room, things up there to be used by the entire community in a historic building. So after a lot of thought and talk, we did approve it, or approve the recommending to the commissioners that they approve it. So, anybody else want to add? Did that sum it up fairly accurately?
Yeah, I'd say that was a good summary in the minutes.
Yeah, the minutes were
Detailed.
They were good. Yeah.
But if you have any questions, we're certainly able to answer those for you.
So I guess I just have a few, and again, so I guess I thought you guys did. First off, MOFAD board, you guys did a great job discussing and cussing and discussing and coming up, you know, with very good discussions. I guess the question for you guys was, the elevator always assumed to be in there?
Yeah.
I mean, it would have had to be.
It was.
To even be able to use it. It had to.
Yes.
I mean, to meet the building codes and the rest, so.
Yeah, because that's the town hall meeting.
Yeah.
That's where the town board meets.
Yeah.
So it's always there.
This project has always been designed as an adaptive reuse, which means we're taking a historic building and bringing it up to its modern, to make it usable in a modern context. And so in order to do that, we have to make it compliant. And in order to do that, we have to make it ADA accessible. And so the way that our architect designed the project was to have it fit within the space of the exterior stairway, which has always been on the building, or at least has been on the building within the period of significance that we're looking at. So
so wait, say that again. So the elevator was going to be located in the exterior stairway?
Mm-hmm. Which,
if so, the exterior, yeah, I saw the pictures.
Yes.
Yeah, so the...
So that when you're looking at it from the outside, you wouldn't be able to tell that there's a lift until you open the door and use it.
Huh.
So that fits the purpose of making...
So what, the exterior stairway then got, in essence, enclosed during this whole process?
It had always been enclosed.
Oh,
So
the exterior stairway really wasn't an exterior stairway. It was kind of a...
It's an enclosed exterior stairway.
Okay.
Yeah. It was.
It was built on the exterior of the building, and then at some point in time, way back in the 30s or 20s, whenever it was operating, it was enclosed.
Right.
So that the stairwell itself, there was a door at the front of the market, and there was a door that went into the... Yeah.
It's that.
Yeah.
One so of those pictures is the historic, and the other one is the current.
Right. Hmm. And I think what happened was, when they first built the building, they had a set of stairs to access the attic and all the storage area. Then ultimately that became a little apartment in the front. And I think that's probably when they closed it up.
I just appreciate that you guys scrutinize these applications. And I know this isn't the first time that the MOFAD's, you know, really found something when you're scrubbing things. So,
yeah,
thank you for doing that.
So I guess I'd ask, and... Eric, is there a particular reason why you're here joining us at this session? And again, I just want to make sure that, you know, I'm not concerned about the elevator in itself, and I'm not really, logistically, I'm not too concerned about the spending or signing the contract for the purchase of the elevator so much either, unless somebody's here to tell me that it would be against our ballot initiative that we put past to be funding that type of a project.
Based on a heads up from Commissioner Corrigan, I did take the opportunity to research this. The questions here that are posed, I'll take them in reverse order. I agree that to err on the side of caution, ADA compliance should be a no-brainer, and the condition of that building should be brought up to standard modern conditions. Concerning accessibility, it doesn't sound like that's now an issue. The first one, though, the elevator being built outside of the project area, and whether the requirement that no construction take place prior to the granting of the grant is a more interesting question. It was proposed at some point to waive that provision in the grant requirements. I don't recommend that. What I would recommend, if the board's inclined to do that, is find simply that the construction of the elevator outside of the working area, outside of the building, does not disqualify it from the grant requirement. I draw an analogy with the CLEF, the Combined Law Enforcement Facility, where, you know, stuff has to happen before the project actually goes vertical, right? We have to order the steel, we have to get construction workers, laborers in line, and that type of thing. One could argue that that is part of the construction phase. I don't think anyone would successfully argue that. And so the analogy here would be that construction of an elevator off-site to probably save money in the long run, but also to meet strict construction deadlines, not only would not disqualify them from the grant, but almost is necessary.
The CLEF analogy popped into my mind right away, just having been at those DOLA hearings, that the project was phased so that we, you know, have work going on out at the CLEF, but because DOLA has the same requirement that you can't start work until the grant is awarded, and we phased it so that we could get the joint grant.
So my question was more, and I don't remember that any of that language was in the ballot initiative, and it was really our prerogative that we wanted this to happen that way so that we didn't have after-the-fact grantees coming in for grant monies after the construction project was done.
I think that vision was adopted from standard DOLA requirements.
In our implementation of the grant program.
Correct.
Yes.
But for the sake of consistency, if nothing else, I would suggest that instead of waiving that provision, you simply find that it doesn't, the pre-construction of the elevator does not rise to a disqualification.
And the other thing that was interesting here, I mean, evidently it sounds like Janet or Noreen, somebody, or you guys had filed for the application before. I mean, the application had been filed and was in our receipt, in my understanding. Is that correct? Before the elevator got the down payment, when Nobel went out and made the down payment on the thing?
I went back and looked through every subcontractor invoice and found that the first payment had been made in February. And the grant application was due, I believe, on April 6th.
Okay, shoot that one in though.
What's that? I mean, I have to, just for the sake of disclosing everything, that is what I found.
No, that's fine. Yeah. We appreciate the honesty, too. So,
but the elevator's being fabricated off-site, and then it's going to be delivered and installed.
Yes.
So if we had even said phase one is fabrication of the elevator, and phase two is its delivery and installation, we would be fine.
Well, and the $26,000 total budget here, I don't know what all the rest of the stuff's in the rest of the $26,000.
We have a budget breakdown that shows the various costs. It's on item 9, the proposed scope of work and budget.
It's what?
82. Well, that actually shows. Sorry, that shows the entire schedule of values for this phase.
Okay.
And the elevator is just one line item in that schedule of values. So if go back a few pages.
So the total.
So it's
proposed scope of work and budget?
Exactly.
Total.
It's page 77 of 121.
Total budget for phase three is $281,000 plus or minus. Part of that coming from this $10,000 historic funds Colorado History Funds.
Right.
A number of different, and just the fundraising that they've done.
Right. So within the elevator project, there's about $3,000 that goes toward just the project launch, like a basic down payment. $16,681 toward materials, $5,292 toward labor, $1,485 toward shipping, and then $815 for the permit and state registration. So that's how that $26,969 fits in. We're calling that the project, but it's really within the phase three project.
Okay. I think I'm fine with it. And then again, back to the other discussion on elevators in historical buildings. We struggle with putting new glass in these things. If we want to have them usable and feasible and people can actually use them, they have to have a little bit of usability in them. And if they're without the elevator, in my mind, the building's not usable in the upper floor. So I don't have a heartburn at all about putting in those kind of new appliances in old buildings, reflecting or genuflecting back into what the intent was in the rest. I don't have a problem with that myself.
I think it's necessary. So, Mr. Chair, I move that we recommend we accept the recommendation of the MOFAB and approve a grant request of $10,000 from the Capacity Building Grant Fund for the Crossins M&A Market Rehabilitation Elevator Project.
Second. Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you guys. Appreciate have a good afternoon.
Thank you for your research.
We have another concert coming up. It is with Todd Moore, and it is June 24th. It's a Sunday. So because there was so much that increased in terms of materials and labor for us, we had to raise a bunch more money. So that's what we're doing.
Well, good luck.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you. Do come down.
And thank you for your continued support of this project.
Oh, God.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
Well, it's kind of like getting into something you can't see it through
when's
to the
When's the town
end.
Council going to start holding meetings there?
You're wondering about the July meeting.
I'm thinking we should postpone our joint meeting until you're in there.
I would say that the July meeting is a possibility, but if not, I'll let you know.
Yeah. Okay.
If you want to take a look at a different one.
Okay.
It's going to be as soon as possible after we can take
I assume we could probably
occupancy.
Tour the facility while we come down there before
you may
the meeting.
The
okay.
That might be
yeah, let's schedule that for our joint meeting.
Good.
All right.
And then we're going to have a grand opening. You'll get an invitation in September 14th. So
okay.
Hopefully we'll all be done. This has been a long haul, and I thank you very much for staying close to the hip with us all this time.
Well, we thank the taxpayers, and I think this is a good cause.
Absolutely.
So.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim.
Have a good
afternoon. Come on, Anna, Todd, Julie.
Hi, Mr. Todd.
Good afternoon.
Hi. Afternoon.
I'm just here as moral support.
Moral support.
Hi.
We got a credit card processing agreement.
That's right.
Did you consult with a criminal defense attorney before you did this?
And you really don't want me to sign
really
it, do you?
It's funny. You're not the first person, Carrie, to say that.
To bring that up?
Yes.
Yeah. Don't want you in the pokey, Todd.
Thank you. Others in the county, including my wife, have sent out. Are you sure you want to do this?
All right, what is this?
I am requesting a waiver for the formal purchasing process in order to enter into an online agreement, contractual agreement with Stripe Incorporated to accept credit card processing in the extension office. And this was brought to a head by hosting the 2018 Master Gardener Conference, which we're going to be doing in July.
So the only question, the other ones that we have for the county, the participant pays the 2.9%.
Correct.
Is that going to be this way here,
yes,
too?
Yes, that is
so
our intent.
That's a little foggy.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's just
so per revenue transaction will be collected. And not Route County funded.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah.
We've already actually got it built into our registration, even though we're going live on the registration without credit card payment, since we're working through this process, that in order to pay with a credit card, they click a button that adds 3% onto their bill. So no funds of that Route County's go that direction.
And that transaction fee goes to Stripe?
Correct.
Okay.
That's correct. It is our hope that in the
future that we're able to use this in our office. You know, we have a lot of money changing hands for a lot of different reasons in our office, and would sure add a level of customer service that we have not been able to have.
You know, and it would actually kind of alleviate a little problem that's been down there since I've been a commissioner. It's the cash fund down there.
I don't know what you're talking about.
No, really, Munis has helped some of this. It's helped with our accounting and the activity fund.
Yeah.
Because we had to keep separate books, which, you know, were audited. But this, and this will help too. Again, from a customer service perspective, oftentimes people say, can I pay with a credit card? And we've always said, no, we're sorry, we can't. But we're hopeful that this will work. And we chose Stripe, just so you know, because it is what Fair Entry, which is a process through 4-H, the state office has already contracted with Stripe to use them as their credit card provider. So we're just trying to make this as easy as possible for CSU, for Rout County. Julie's familiar with the system.
Right. With Stripe?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay.
I think they're much better than PayPal for this process.
Okay. Similar fees?
Similar fees, but there's also an annual fee with PayPal, okay. And they seem to creep up. I've used them in nonprofits that I was on the board with,
okay,
and they took more than we wanted them to take. Also, they have bigger data breaches in their history than Stripe does.
Okay. I would move that we approve and authorize Todd Hagenbooz, the Rout County Director of CSU Extension, signature on the electronically the Stripe Incorporated Stripe Services Agreement for credit card transactions processing at the 2.9% per transaction fee.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
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 Thank you very much.
Thank you.